This is the Say Yes to Fire Show. And now, join the conversation with Susanna Say Yes as she takes you on a mind-opening journey into the daunting world of financial independence and retiring early. We interview guests. We talk about stocks, crypto, and more. Streaming to the world and beyond. And beyond. Your Mondays will never be the same. Ready? Three, two, one. Fire.
Hi there. Hola. ¿Qué tal? You're listening to the Financial Diaries of a Millennial on her way to financial independence and retiring early. That millennial is me, Susanna, your host. Do you want to retire early and be wealthy? If that is a sound yes, jump into this financial journey where we figure out together how to make your money work for you and not the other way around. Disclaimer, this is free financial education, guys. Not financial advice. Oh, don't forget to follow Say Yes to Fire on Instagram
and Twitter.
Let's dive right in. Let me tell you something that they don't teach in schools. Money can be many things. It has actually taken many forms throughout history. And when we talk about money, we should be aware of its main characteristics, which are durability, portability, divisibility, uniformity, limited supply or scarcity, and acceptability. As I said, money has come in all shapes and sizes throughout history. But there has only ever been one truly sound system. Money backed by gold. The gold standard undergrew the age of prosperity and stability during the end of the 19th century. That all changed in the early 20th century, when European governments abandoned the gold and fiscal prudence to fund their war efforts. The world hasn't been the same since, and we have endured decades of rising debt and boom and bust cycles, ups and downs. But everything changed after the last big economic crisis. Why? In 2009, Bitcoin came into the picture.
So Bitcoin, what is it? What isn't it? Why should you care? In this episode, I'm going to explain how it works. And in future episodes, I'll talk about how that fits in your portfolio and how it exactly fits in your FIRE strategy. But for now, I invited a software developer who fell down the rabbit hole and believes truly in the potential of Bitcoin. Hello, Caio. How are you?
Hello, Susanna. I'm good. How are you?
Also good. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really dying to ask, what does it mean to be a Bitcoin maximalist?
Well, it can mean different things to different people, I guess. Initially, the term was coined by Vitalik from Ethereum. And it was like, oh yeah, these people that only think Bitcoin is good enough and they don't think as broadly. I think even in Investopedia, I saw a summary of like, so a Bitcoin maximalist believes that Bitcoin, which is the world's most popular cryptocurrency, is the only digital asset that will be needed in the future. And like I personally don't think the other altcoins are all shit. So they're all shit coins. But at least in terms of money, I think Bitcoin is the only one that actually makes sense.
You know, I completely agree on that. Bitcoin makes a lot of sense if we talk about money, sound money. And now, what is your history with Bitcoin? And what are the things that made you become so passionate about Bitcoin?
So I first heard about Bitcoin when I was in college. I think it was around 2010, 2012. I don't remember, to be honest. I just heard someone say, hey, there's no thing like money for the internet. I was like, yeah, well, whatever. Seems cool. I don't care. Move on. I think most people, when they first heard about Bitcoin, they were kind of like this. But then I think around in 2017, there was a lot of political agitation in Brazil. So we had a president that had been impeached and there was a lot of things going on. So I wanted to learn more and be more active in politics. So I started to learn and I found out about libertarianism and I started researching about libertarianism, basically listening to podcasts and looking at YouTube videos as kind of like a way against the government. So I was like, well, I want to live without government because the government here is only doing bad things. And I went to a talk from a YouTuber that was about libertarianism and he was explaining how money works and how in the bank, you don't really own the money that's in the bank. Like if you have an account on the bank, the money that's in there, but it's not your money. It's in possession of the bank. At any time, he can decide to not give you your money. And he said, well, Bitcoin could be a good option against that. And that's when I fell down the rabbit hole.
I completely feel you. I got the same. Like, it's so true. Like, once you start learning about Bitcoin, it's just so enlightening that you can't really stop. I 100% agree on that. So one thing, I've always been like really curious about the technical aspects about Bitcoin. And I know that you are a developer, a software developer as your profession. So let's say if you were to explain the main technical aspects about the Bitcoin blockchain to like someone like me that is not really technical in that sense, where would you start?
The idea of Bitcoin was to be a digital money, right? So you say, okay, I have this money that I can transfer on computers and on the internet. And like, that's not so hard to do if you think about it. Like a good example I can think of is like money in games. Like you have a lot of games that have gold coins and tokens. For example, let's say in World of Warcraft, you can have gold coins. But then that money is controlled by the company who made the game. So like, they control the servers that run the game and they control how much money you have. And if they want to take your money away, they can do that. If you think about our money, it's kind of the same thing as well. It's money that's controlled by central banks. So the idea of Bitcoin is to take that power away and to make it distributed. So like the idea is to be a token that's digital, but it belongs to nobody.
So is that all about the protocol, let's say, of Bitcoin?
Yes, sort of. So I think the it's hard to talk about Bitcoin as one thing. They can be different things. You can say talk about the Bitcoin protocol. We can talk about the Bitcoin network. You can talk about the Bitcoin token, and they're all called Bitcoin. The protocol exists so that you know how to send Bitcoins from one person to the other. And then the important part is that the network needs to agree on a consensus of who has how much money. In the Bitcoin network, you don't need to rely on anybody. You are your own judge, kind of. You have to trust what the code says.
So it's like eliminating the middleman.
Yeah, basically.
And what about the famous blocks, the famous chain, and the miners? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so the idea is that a block is a group of transactions. So every time you have you make a transaction, you send it to the network, but it's not done yet. So it's just waiting to be executed. People make a block that has a bunch of transactions, and then when the block's created, it validates all of those transactions at the same time. And the miners are the people who are working to make that block. And so if a block has been worked on, and you can prove that the miners worked on that block, then you can say, okay, the blockchain that has more work is the one that I trust. For example, at some point, the blockchain has two blocks at the same time. And you know, okay, which one is the right one? And then the next one on top of that is going to increase the work on that blockchain. So you can always know, okay, the one that has more work is the one that I trust. And that's kind of the job of the miners. They put in the work to create the blocks.
That is exactly why it's called proof of work, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And how difficult is to mine a block? Can we do it like at home?
Yeah, we can. I mean, it gets more difficult the more people use the network, right? So in the beginning, when Satoshi created Bitcoin, you could mine Bitcoins in your laptop. And there are like people who did it in the early days, they could mine lots and lots of Bitcoins just in their laptops without much worry. Because the idea is that the network needs to be in sync. So it needs to be synchronized in the whole world. So if I create a block and I send it in the internet, it might take some time until a guy on the other side of the world to download that block. So I say, let's wait 10 minutes until we make a new block to make sure that everybody downloaded the latest version of the block. And that 10 minutes, it's the difficulty. So if there are more people mining, the difficulty of mining increases. And if there are less people mining, the difficulty decreases after a while to try to keep that 10-minute mark.
And do you know how much you can earn by mining like a block, for example? How many Bitcoin?
Yeah, so when you mine a block, you get rewarded for doing that. And that's called like the coin-based transaction, which is a transaction that generates Bitcoin out of nothing. But it's in a protocol that you can only have one transaction of those per block, and the transaction has a defined amount of Bitcoin that you can generate. And that amount decreases over time. So like every 4 years, the reward you get decreases by half. So it started with 50, and then after 4 years, it went to 25, and then after 4 years, it went to 12 and a half. It's going to keep going like that. Every 4 years, it's going to be half and half.
This is super interesting from like an economic perspective, because that is what makes Bitcoin deflationary. The extra coins, let's say, that are given into the whole network diminish over time. And that, for me, it's like really, really interesting, because we don't have any currency that is currently deflationary in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And even Bitcoin in the beginning, it wasn't designed with that in mind specifically. So like the main idea in the beginning was the whole blockchain to make sure that we have consensus in the network and that everybody agrees on how much money each one has. But then right in the beginning, the first iterations, these cryptography people, a lot of them had these economic ideas about Austrian economics, saying that money needs to be sound and it needs to be limited. And so instead of having inflation, they would rather have deflation and have a limited amount of coins. So then they said they put that in the protocol as well as a economic mechanism that made sense for Bitcoin.
Amazing. So now let's spill the tea. In the last episode, my guest Dirk, a GameStop investor and believer, expressed, let's say pretty clearly, if I'm honest, his skepticism about Bitcoin. His first concern was an imminent Bitcoin bank run. The fact that Bitcoin is decentralized and there is no central authority like central bank that would be able to control such an event is, for him, kind of scary. And now that I think about it, it might also be scary for me. So we, all Bitcoin investors, would lose it all in that sense. So how do you feel about that, Caio?
I think there might be some misconceptions, or maybe for me and how I understand his question, because what I understand of a bank run is when you say, oh my God, like I need to take all of my money out of the bank, and then the bank is not going to give me my money, so I'm not going to have anything, or everybody's going to take their money out of Bitcoin, right? So in the first scenario where it's like, okay, I need to take my money out of the bank, that doesn't happen in Bitcoin. Like, that doesn't exist, because we don't have Bitcoin banks. Like, the whole idea of Bitcoin is that you need to be your own bank. So this is a famous saying that we have, that you need to control your own coins. So you need to have the keys to your wallet so that you, and only you, can move your coins. So you have to take ownership and custody of your money in Bitcoin. In the other sense of a bank run, as in everybody's selling their Bitcoin, I mean, that could happen. The market is free, and if people don't think Bitcoin is worth it and they think it's a bubble and they just want to sell it, they could sell it. And you're trusting it in the same way that you're trusting anything else that you buy, I guess.
Yeah, that's very true. I think what Dirk meant was the second part, like if everyone sells indeed Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin is going to decrease. But when I say the value of Bitcoin, I mean against, for example, the USD dollar. I'm going to shoot you another question. There is a big concern that about 50% of all mining is in China. And some time ago, I was reading about the 51% attack from China. It was actually really scary. What really happened, Caio? Are we like Bitcoin investors in real danger?
No, I don't think so. Like, there's a big misconception about this 51% attack, because when people hear about Bitcoin, they hear that, okay, mining is what makes the blocks and they control the blockchain, which is not really true. Like, the mining is a competition between the miners. So like every miner is trying to make that work, the calculation, in order to create the next block. But it's not like, it's not a vote. It's not a democracy. It's like, okay, I vote that I have more vote power to create blocks than you do, so I decide how to make that. Like, it's not how it works. It's a competition, and it's a chance. So if I have more than 50% of the mining power, it means I have a higher chance to make the next block. So because I'm so powerful, I can make two blocks in a row, for example, or three blocks in a row. Because the chance that I I'm the one who finds the next block is bigger than the other miners. But the other miners still exist and they're still going to generate blocks. So it's not a thing super concerning that they will control the network. I mean, it could be a problem because it centralizes the network and people, and those miners could be targeted, or like the government could take over those miners who are powerful and something like that. So it is a concern, but it's not as if, okay, as whoever has more power owns the network. And it's more about small attacks that people consider of like double spends, which is when, for example, you make a block that sends money to someone, but then you secretly make another block, and then you say, okay, I sent you money. Here's a transaction that gives you 10 Bitcoins, and this is the block that I mined. But because I'm so powerful, I create two other blocks that don't send you that money. And all of a sudden, because those have more work, those are the valid blocks instead. And you thought you got the money, but then there's a reorganization in the chain and you actually didn't. But it's a small trick to play on people. And like, if you are half of the minings in the world, you need to be a big, like, who are you going to trick with that thing, right? And it's also common knowledge that you should wait. Like the best practice is that you should wait at least 6 blocks to make sure their transaction is really confirmed. So like it's one of the concerns that the developers take when they are thinking about protecting the network, and they say, okay, what kinds of attacks could happen against the Bitcoin network? And say, oh, people can pretend to be a fake node, or like they can be a man in the middle attack, or those kinds of things that are in computer science that they worry about, but it's not very realistic, and it's not like a big concern as if they would take over the network all of a sudden because they're too powerful.
Moving on with other Bitcoin related concerns. I have this burning question, Kyle. What do you think that are the main roadblocks to Bitcoin fullest adoption?
Bitcoiners like to say that hyper Bitcoinization is inevitable. So like, at some point in the future, it's going to be inevitable that people are going to use Bitcoin all over the world as a natural thing because of the network effect that it has. So it's like using social media. As when people start using one, all of their friends want to use it, and like it just explodes out of nowhere because everybody's using it all of a sudden. But there are always concerns about how it's going to happen. And one thing like that I mentioned before is decentralization of the network. If people start using Bitcoin with like a third-party service, or like you leave your Bitcoins in the exchange, for example, then the exchange controls all the Bitcoins. It's not your money, it's the exchange's money.
And what about scalability?
Yeah, so that's also a big concern because the blockchain increases in size with every block that's generated. And if you want to run a node, you need to have a big hard drive, kind of. And people think, okay, let's just make the blocks bigger and that's going to allow more transactions to happen per minute. But then the Bitcoin blockchain gets even bigger and bigger, and it's not sustainable in the long term. So there are also concerns about that, and people have been always trying to optimize how the network works, propose different solutions. So I think one of the biggest examples is second layer solutions, which is you make transactions that are not really in the blockchain, but you can trust that those transactions happened, and then after some time you just settle your score into the blockchain. So like the Lightning Network is the biggest example nowadays, where you can make instant transactions and then you can do those transactions for days, for example, and then after some time you say, okay, let's settle this in the actual blockchain to make sure that it's valid. So I think those are things that we can do to make the Bitcoin speed a lot faster and a lot more scalable.
To me, the Lightning Networks works a bit like, let's say, the global financial system. So maybe we could compare it on how SWIFT, which is the messaging service that most of the banks use, works. So in order for you to, like, let's say, access another bank and settle your money to other bank, apart from going through all the central banks that you need to, let's say, to exchange this money. So from euros, imagine you want to do euros to, I don't know, Taipat. You might want to go through, well, first settling the euros in the European Central Bank. And then you might want another parent bank to settle you in the Taibat clearing system, for example. So for me, the Lightning Network kind of like resembles this financial system. And one of the things about how, let's say, the current financial system or banking system works is that this corresponding banking takes certain fees to like help you bring your euro transaction to, for example, Taibat. And that's why other services like PayPal exist, because then people can directly send money to different PayPal wallets. So if we come back to the Lightning Network, how do you think that people like you and me, or is it even possible to make money out of the Lightning Network as, like, for example, a side hustle?
Yeah, for sure. Like the Lightning Network has a very similar concept, like you said. So the idea is that you create a channel, which is like a payment communication channel between two people. But to make that channel, you need to lock your coins in that channel so that it needs enough liquidity for the payments to happen in between you and the other person, right? So if you have lots of channels and you are like well connected, you're going to need to have a lot of Bitcoin to put for liquidity in those channels for the transactions to go through. And the idea of the Lightning Network is that it's a network. So you can route the payments between channels. So I can say, okay, I want to send you money, but I don't have a channel open with you, but I have a channel open with another guy, and the payment's going to go to him and then from him to you. And because I have a channel open with him and he has a channel open with you. So he's routing our payment from me to you. And because that needs for you to lock your money into the channel, you can charge a small fee to route those payments. And in the same way that the Swift network does.
Exactly. So we can become small payment service providers. That's funny.
Yeah.
I have one comment to make, Caio.
Sure.
I've heard many, many times that Bitcoin is a pump and dump scheme. And even our dear Warren Buffett even called it, and I quote, probably rat poison squared, contrary to the interest of civilization. How would you react to this comment, Caio?
I can say, have fun staying poor. No, I'm kidding. No, I mean, it's hard to know for sure what's going to happen, right? We cannot predict the future. And I think a good rule of thumb for Bitcoin and for any other, especially for other cryptocurrencies, is that you shouldn't invest more than you're willing to lose. So like I said in the beginning, the whole idea of Bitcoin is that it's a digital token. And in the end, it only has value because we give it value, because we think it's valuable to transact using that. But if all of a sudden everybody thinks it's not worth it anymore and they just don't want to use it, it could go to zero. It is a possibility. Like, even though I firmly believe that it's not going to happen, and I have investments and that's because I believe in them, it doesn't mean I'm right all the time. So you should always protect yourself when you're investing and making sure that you have other diversifications and strategies to not pull all your eggs in the same basket, right?
And what is your strategy specifically when, let's say, investing in Bitcoin?
So I think because we believe Bitcoin is going to be valuable in the long term, and it's a market that's still developing and people are still learning how to use it. Like the adoption is growing, and also the markets around Bitcoin are getting more complex and they're also growing. So if you look at the Bitcoin chart across time, if you take a big time frame, it increases hugely. So there were times where Bitcoin was, that's why it became famous, right? Because at some point Bitcoin was worth $10, like $100, then $1,000, and now it's in $30,000. The idea that it has a network effect that's going to continue to grow and that's going to attract more people towards sound money. For you as an investor, if you are not super experienced and you really understand the market and understand the players and all the whales that are trying to get money out of other people, for me, the safest approach is to just buy little by little along a very long period of time. So basically, it's just your dollar cost average and you just hold forever. Just hold on for your life, like HODL.
HODL, HODL, HODL.
Yeah, just dollar cost average and HODL. So you can buy a little bit per week or per month. And like I said, something that you're not going to miss if you lose that money.
And now we are focusing, let's say, on investing in Bitcoin and like HODLing, right? But Do you think at some point in the future people are going to start transacting with Bitcoin, or do you think that that's something like Bitcoin is going to remain like the place or the asset to put your savings in?
I think it really depends, because Bitcoin can be different things for different people in different places. I think Bitcoin is not very attractive for people who are in first world countries and who are very comfortable. They have a very good financial structure. They have a lot of investment options and they're very comfortable already with their financial situation, right? But if you start thinking about countries that have a lot of restrictions, like there are countries where you have limits on the amount of dollars that you can have, because they otherwise the local currency would just go to hell. So you cannot invest in any company that you want. You cannot do anything. And in those countries, it's even more acute how their currency is being devalued over time against stronger currencies, right? And for them, I think it makes sense to not only have the savings of Bitcoin, but also to do their transactions, because they just cannot trust their local money anymore. And recently, El Salvador passed a bill to make Bitcoin legal tender. So if you go to El Salvador, every merchant is obligated by law to accept Bitcoins as payment now.
Have you ever spent your Bitcoin, like bought something with your Bitcoin?
Yeah, I went to a Bitcoin meetup here in my city, and they were selling beers and snacks for Bitcoin. So I paid both with Bitcoin network and with the Lightning network. It was really cool.
That's like super cool. Like, I'm jealous. I honestly never used my Bitcoin to pay or to do anything. Right now, I'm just holding for my dear life. And maybe one final question, Kai. This whole 2021, let's say beginning of the year, has been turmoil. Like, it has been crazy with the ups and downs. And maybe what I want to elaborate in here is, what is your vision with what happened, like the super huge, let's say, growth of the value of Bitcoin at the beginning of the year and now dropping, let's say, 50% of its value in like 1 week, 2 weeks? How do you see this?
Yeah, I think it's fairly normal, I'd say. Like, if you're in the space for a long time, you kind of get like used to these movements, and you start not caring about them anymore, to be honest. Like, at least for me, it depends on how you approach this, right? So if you really want to time the market and make your trades, then you're on top of those things all the time. But if you're just long-term investing and you're looking for the long term, those fluctuations don't matter too much, because like I said before, in 2017 there was also these big fluctuations, and I was like, oh my god, it went from 7,000 to 20, then back to 3. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And now it's back up to 30 again. So it becomes insignificant if you think about it long-term. And as long as like the principles are solid and you think there's real value in this whole thing, it's just part of like a new currency being created. I think like it's a new market, and it's sort of going on. It's new to everybody. So it's new dynamics that are happening, and people are just trying to price that in, and it gets kind of crazy.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Do you think that we are still, let's say, in a bearish market, that Bitcoin is going to drop farther down the $30,000?
I honestly don't have an opinion on that, because I don't feel like I'm educated enough financially to predict those things. So like I hear people saying that, technical analysis doesn't work that well, and then there's like first principles and all of these other ways for you to try to predict what the market's going to do. And for Bitcoin, it's that in a bigger scale, because the volatility is so big. So I can think that, it's going to be super bullish and it's going to increase. And then just Elon Musk tweets something, and then or China bans Bitcoin for the 10th time, and people get scared and the price goes down. So,
well, I think this is a good place to leave it. Thank you so much, Caio, for being here. This was such an amazing conversation. I think our audience is gonna love it. Everyone like is interested about Bitcoin. I think it's important to understand also the fundamentals, and we touch upon that. So thank you so much, and I hope you have fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. It was really cool. Nice talking to you.
If you're dying to comment on everything that was discussed in this episode, if you want to share your opinion, if you're just going to shout to the world what you're feeling right now, go and find me on Instagram, Say Yes to Fire, on Twitter, Say Yes to Fire, and even you can join our Reddit community with the subreddit Say Yes to Fire. Come on, come and find me and let's share our thoughts. Your world will never be the same. You like this conversation? Do you have enough to think about till next Monday? I'm aware that the last couple of episodes were full of insightful information, and you probably need to digest it all in due time. But again, that is part of our journey, right? It also took me time to do that, and that's okay. But also true that in parallel, I also kept developing my, let's say, more practical investment skills. So I thought that the next episode is going to be about how to build your portfolio. I'm going to reveal what my financial personality is, and I'm going to give you the tools to know what's yours. Till next time.
You've been listening to the Say Yes to Fire podcast. Consider yourself enriched. For the latest, go to SusannaSayYes.nl. That's Susanna, SELLES.nl. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from the show. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share. Remember, sharing is caring. Till next time.